Hello, lovely podcast people. I hope you're well. This is a listener's questions episode. And realistically, these questions are things I would probably have recorded in a podcast anyway. Some good questions and so many on common themes. So it makes it quite easy. So I have half a dozen or slightly more here to answer for you. Very quickly, this podcast is pseudo-sponsored by Mac Nutrition Live. Just to let you know, Mac Nutrition Live is on the 19th of November, so not that far away. The topic titles have been confirmed. They're very cool. We've got one on unique insights into hypothalamic amenorrhea and energy availability from an eating disorder dietitian. That one's going to be super cool from the perspective of lots of client case studies, lots of stuff to do with body fat levels and loss of periods versus a lack of calories. And those two things are not exactly the same. So that's going to be super cool. One on how we can improve our relationship with food through a somatic or body-based lens. That one, again, really interesting, insightful. I think that's going to be one of the most unique talks, not something that I've seen anywhere else. So that's going to be a cool one. And then finally, is getting clients to intentionally lose weight, or is trying to intentionally lose weight yourself doing more harm than good? What does the research say? And then there's going to be a roundtable Q&A, which I am going to jump in on as well. So yeah, tickets go on sale 4th of October. So we're doing different releases, like first release, second release, third release. So your best bet is to get it as close to the 4th of October if you've made that decision. Mac Nutrition Live, as usual, is at East Midlands Conference Centre in Nottingham. And it's super cool. It's such a, we were talking about this today. It's difficult sometimes to sell what we're about, like just how inclusive we are, just how much of a, Sarah said, you know, we should really remind people that we're not a fitness event. Like we're just in everything an event. We're the misfits, really, in that, you know, there's no one walking around in string vest bodybuilders. There's no one walking around thinking they're better than anyone else. There's no one walking around thinking that they're academics or they're cleverer than other people. It's just a really nice event with really amazing, lovely speakers. And we just, the community, as it were, if you don't feel like you're part of that community yet, it's, you know, we always find out if people are coming alone and we help people meet people. So in terms of networking is a dirty word, isn't it, really? But getting to know like-minded individuals. And on top of it all, there's all the all-day refreshments, £99 for a ticket. Like, you look at all of these other rubbish, junky, fitness, health, nutrition, whatever events, and they're expensive, and you have to pay for your own food and drinks. We provide a hot buffet lunch, two-course, but it's really, really good. Always gets lots of compliments. All-day refreshments. Like, you could spend £99 just on coffee at an event in London. And yeah, food and snacks all day. And then if you so wish, we obviously have the dinner, the really nice dinner, three-course sort of black tie dinner, and then the infamous, I shouldn't say infamous, famous inaugural after-party event, should you wish to come to that. Anyway, so please get your ticket early if you know you want to come. £99 tickets on the first release, and then they go up in, you know, I think it's £109 second release, £119 third release, and then I think there's a jump for fourth release to £149, and then it goes to the full price tickets, which is £199. So if you are really keen, get yourself in early to get one of those first few release tickets. So anyway, without further ado, I'll go on to this episode, and it's all a follow-on about protein. I obviously did last episode on protein for kids. And yes, the first question I've got here is having protein with each meal something to aim for with children? And I put that one in because that was answered in last episode. But it is the main reason that I decided to do these podcasts, because there's so much anxiety around protein for children. I need to make sure they're eating loads of protein. And often this comes from a whatever, more of an adult perspective. Protein is rammed down our throats by the media and whoever. And protein is a great macronutrient, just like carbohydrates and fats. Protein is really a bit of the poster boy or girl at the minute in terms of health. Be healthy, eat lots of protein. And I've sort of said quite often, you know, you don't, you're getting 2 grams per kilogram, which seems to be a bit of this health and fitness industry standard is not necessary for optimal health, whereas and people really push it a bit too hard. It's not even necessarily necessary for optimal muscle retention or appetite suppression if you're trying to lose body fat, for instance. Anyway, so is having protein with each meal something to aim for with children? Not particularly. And really what I think you're talking about here is visible protein as well. Because if you're just having, you know, there's protein in broccoli, there's protein in oats. What I imagine you're thinking more of is like a really specific dairy or, you know, milk, eggs, cheese, or meat or fish protein source. But which is fine to have one of those, or obviously a visible vegetarian source of protein. Like, you don't need to worry about it's, you know, and I joked about this, like hitting leucine threshold at every meal for a child. It's not needed. Variety and energy intake, and, you know, variety specifically around the area of micronutrient intake, and then variety in terms of just all of the different components of food that are good for us, down to kind of like the bioactive components that we don't fully understand, but things like polyphenols from just different whole food sources is what we want to be aiming for. And sometimes it's just to provide some energy. You know, there's nothing wrong with snacks that are relatively low nutrient density if your child needs energy, if they are simply really hungry, and something that just doesn't, you know, I mean, say like oatcakes. Ollie and Arlo, when they were little, just loved oatcakes for whatever reason. I'm not a huge fan. Now they'll sometimes, very rarely, have oatcakes, but they'll tend to have something on them. Like if they had them with some hummus, it's like, oh, that's like a real healthy snack. But if you're just given oatcakes, like, there's not a great deal within an oatcake. But obviously there are things that we don't necessarily think about, like the fiber content, the beta-glucans, the things that the fiber being something that we understand more of. Actually, it's really part of a healthy diet more than ever, than just, oh, this helps you have healthy bowel movements. There's more to kind of fiber and the gut these days, I think, in terms of people's understanding, than there used to be. So you don't have to aim for like really visible sources of protein at every meal. And this, the next question is, has your opinion on this changed in recent years? And I think the answer to that question specifically, because I know what they're asking, is no. But I have become less, I did find myself going like, yeah, I am trying to, I do worry sometimes if I'm like, God, they haven't had anything that sort of resembles protein in breakfast or lunch, you know, majorly, other than just a bit of milk in their cereal maybe. And sometimes they might have even just had toast with, you know, a low, you know, not with peanut butter, with just something like jam on or whatever, something without any protein particularly. So I found myself worrying and then realizing, you know, taking myself actually to a theoretical point of view and going, you don't need to be worrying about this. They are far, far, far from being protein deficient or even anywhere near suboptimal levels. But my opinion, what this person was asking is, when Ollie was a baby, I was eating some Greek yogurt with some whey protein in it. And she basically wanted some. She loved the taste of it. And it just became a thing that she really liked to have. And so there was this idea of this person, I think, thought I was giving it to her for the protein, but realistically, I was just giving her a chocolate-flavored yogurt, something that she just liked the taste of, not something that I was trying to boost her protein intake with. Okay, cool. So that leads me nicely. I've tried to order these questions well. So far, I feel very proud of myself, because the next question is, can kids have protein powders? The answer is yes. Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet eating her curds and steroids. Did anyone's mum ever think that protein powder was steroids? You know, eating her curds and whey. Whey protein is, it's because it's now put in these tubs with bodybuilders who are, you know, likely using steroids on them, and they're just kind of made out to be fairly magical when they're not. You know, you can put on 12, I remember the old Maxi Muscle adverts, you know, you can put on 12 pounds of muscle in, or was it 10 pounds in 12 weeks? Like, it was ridiculous. it's just whey protein. It's just part of the processing. When, you know, when we take milk, it's one of the components of milk, the whey and the casein. So can kids have protein powders? Yes. The next question is, should protein supplements be used at 16 years old? So, you know, they've given an age there. Now, it's very important. I sometimes find people say, oh, you know, I've had different answers from different people. Well, if you're asking a question and the person's answering the question you've asked, not what you think you've asked, you're going to get different, because the answer, the question here, I think realistically should be, can protein supplements be used at 16 years old? Because should, it's like, that would, just imagine the answer where the answer to that is yes. Yes, 16 year olds should be using protein supplements. Like, that would be a very odd answer to give. Whereas if you're writing should, but you mean can, or if you write should and someone hears it as can because they don't read the question carefully, and you get the answer yes, it becomes confusing. So should they? Not necessarily. Can they? Yes, they can. I made the joke in an episode before about, you look at some 16-year-olds these days and they are massive. They are, particularly some of the boys, I think you can call them boys at 16, but they are not boys, are they? They're men. They're gorillas. It's bizarre, isn't it? The stages of development. I was a very late developer. I still, if I shave, I have a very baby face. But anyway, Ollie was having whey protein at 2 or 3 years. Not a lot, not drinking whole protein shakes, but a little bit of whey protein was fine. Did she need it? Most categorically, no, she did not need it. So should they, can they? Well, when they should, is dependent on other factors. So if they have I'm going to leave that, and I'm going to come on. I've put right at the end a bit of a discussion around protein needs and athletic populations. So I'll move on. I've got a segue or a side question, which was, are high protein yogurts that we eat as adults okay for kids? Again, yeah, like, they're not necessarily, but they are fine for them to eat. These things are just dairy products. Like, oh, are they? I wouldn't really ever expect a parent to say to me, can my child have a glass of milk? And realistically, that's what they're having, or two glasses of milk. Like, the protein content is not abnormally high. And there was a question, yeah, what are the negative impacts of children? Oh no, that was not it. Is there a safe upper limit on protein intake? Very clever question, if it doesn't impact them getting an otherwise adequate dietary intake. And I think that's the main point here, is when you have a young child, and I think I may have said this in the last episode, is, or at least another sort of parenting nutrition podcast, when you have a good functioning appetite and essentially signaling mechanisms in a child, in a person, if they eat a lot of calories, it tends to reduce their appetite. Now, you get parents giving their children lots of milk because they're used to drinking milk from the bottle, and it's like, well, they're not eating their food, they're not weaning well, they're not, and it's simply because they're just used to guzzling so much milk and their appetite is going down. So you start restricting the milk, as in you just portion it if you're using formula, or you breastfeed it less, or whatever you're doing, you express less and put less in the bottle, so that they're hungry, so then they want to eat the food. So in this instance, if I was giving Ollie like Greek yogurt with loads of protein powder and giving her a significant amount, she's going to want to eat less of other stuff. And at that age, where maybe we're wanting to her to try different foods or eat more, it wouldn't have been helpful to give her a great deal. So it's worth bearing this stuff in mind, that that's a really, you've given that caveat of, if it doesn't impact it, it's just understanding that it will impact it when it goes too high. So where does that upper intake, like, it's so high, like, protein is not going to damage you, like the whole myth about protein damaging kidneys, until it gets obscenely high, which would just be a completely abnormal diet. It would be like some silly, crazy moron feeding their diet, their child a carnivore diet, which, let's hope we never see that, like we saw with the parents trying to force babies to be vegan, you know, from very, very young age. Right. At what age should protein be emphasized? Is there any difference in needs during puberty? I think, mention this in my last episode. And actually, I guess I found this surprising. Once children hit that kind of age, the guidelines actually drop down by 0.1 of a gram per kilogram. But realistically, these are like the lower end of the needs. If you're aiming for this, like I kind of mentioned to you, 1 gram per kilogram area at the very basic level and above, which generally they will be eating, you're going to be just fine. And, you're never going to need to go, oh, I need to lower it or I need to increase it. It's not an issue. And that kind of leads me to the question where what are the negative impacts of children not getting enough protein? Well, you know, I don't know if you guys remember or if you learned about it at school, but you've got this thing, kwashiorkor, very extreme protein malnourishment. Realistically, in the short and long term, it's not happening. If it is, it's a bit more of a serious issue of malnourishment. It's highly unlikely. Like, when you say enough here, you're talking about deficiency and long-term deficiency. You know, you can go and read about those, but you're just highly unlikely in a situation. At least I really, truly hope you're not in that sort of situation. And really, protein might not be the worst thing of that situation. There might just be huge overall malnourishment if you're simply not able to afford foods. But yes, you know, wide-ranging immunological issues, growth and development, bone health. So yeah, it's more a case of like, oh, if they don't have any meal, if they don't have enough protein that day, no issue. Long term, obviously, we're talking bigger issues because there are essential amino acids we need to sustain life. Okay, we don't eat much meat, but do have corn. Is it a satisfactory substitute? Corn is and other different kind of meat substitutes, they are providing us. This is why vegetarian diets are not the worst. Like vegan diets, it's very difficult to be casually adequate. You have to really put your thinking cap on. You have to very carefully plan a vegan diet for it to be good. With a vegetarian diet where you're consuming sources of dairy, it's much, much easier. You also have obviously these other kind of mushroom or fungi based protein sources, as well as, you know, all different vegetarian type foods that are made and formulated to be a bit more adequate on the protein front. They're maybe slightly suboptimal from a muscle recovery sporting performance, but things can be done when that, you know, if you have a vegetarian athlete. Which leads me on to my final question, which is, do needs change as kids get older or very active with sports? Sorry, I'm just walking off camera. I'm just double checking. Yeah, my recording equipment is still going. So I'm going to specifically focus on, we don't have amazing data on teens who are very active, kind of athletes, this, that, and the other. And I will actually post you a reference from, I think it's a position stand maybe, from the Sports Dietitian Australia. And just it's just a nice summary essentially, which just says really what we need to do with adolescent athletes is mimic the advice for adults. There's no reason to believe it should be different. That's as long as the adults are not, you know, we're talking the guidelines, the advice of people like me, not you know, your gym bro down the gym. Oh yeah, your kid should be having protein like me and he's a moron and just having 4 grams per kilogram or whatever. So what I will say is their body weights will tend to be lower. And if they're a huge kid, like jacked rugby playing or whatever kid, they will be heavier and their needs will be higher. But because we're basing on this like per kilogram body weight, we start to go more towards these sports nutrition recommendations of somewhere between, you know, even at the absolute lower end, 1.2, but I would be talking about like a lower end 1.3, 1.4. If you're 1.4 and above grams of protein per kilogram of their body weight, say they weigh 50 kilos, you go for 1.5, that's 75 grams of protein, which is not a great deal when you think about it. And you start discussing protein shakes, like you don't need to be double scooping a protein shake if you weigh 50 kilos. You know, you maybe need more like 15 grams of protein. If you're using a whey protein, like 15 grams of protein, it's it's less than a scoop of just a plain whey protein product. Sorry, I'm just doing some maths in my head. Yeah, it's like 20 grams, and a typical scoop is maybe 25, 30 grams. I was just quickly doing that, trying to convert what's 15 times 0.7. 15 grams divided by 0.7. That was the difficult thing, I think. Anyway, so where was I? Yeah, so essentially you're looking, and there's been some studies done in young adolescent athletes, which you using these amounts, you know, we just don't have a really good body of literature in these kind of these age groups, but we do have enough insight to think, you know, around this level they can be training, they can be recovering well on these level of intakes, they can even be accruing muscle protein, you know, lean body mass in the right way by consuming those levels of protein intake. So if you have got a really great athletic, doing loads and loads of sports, but I think as soon as you realize how many calories they're consuming just to kind of maintain body weight and the amount of protein that they're just naturally consuming without supplements, you'll go, oh, do you know what, actually we don't need supplements, or oh okay, there's we'll just top it up a little bit, and do you know what, we'll use the post-competitive, post-training period just to have a small amount of extra protein from an easy consumable protein source that adds in some electrolytes, that adds in some hydration, some quick digesting protein that tastes really good. Brilliant. We'll drink that on the car on the way home. A couple of hours later, we're eating lunch or we're eating dinner, and they're getting another source hit of protein. Cool. Look at that. I feel like that was quick fire, good information, not too many, if any, tangents. Just a reminder, Matt Nutrition Live, please, please, please put a note in your diary if you want to attend Nottingham, UK, East Midlands Conference Centre, 19th of November, 4th of October, tickets go on sale, and they will go, you know, they will go fast. I'm going to be publicising this, be sending it out to the MNU updates list and probably my Mac mail. So please jump in if you want to, and grab some of those first release tickets. Right, until next time, I hope you enjoyed this. Much love.